Would you like to be able to start conversations like a pro? Take the Sunday World, your daily dose of what's going on. Do not consume the Sunday World if you're involved in a drug cartel, you're a politician with something to hide, or you've appeared on a reality TV show and care about others' opinions. Consume the Sunday World responsibly. Always read the stories, gossip, and commentary.
You can't beat the sound of a contented cat. That's why veterinary surgeon and natural pet food pioneer John Burns developed Burns Pet Nutrition. Because he knows the positive impact a natural diet has on our beloved pets. And our premium cat food is designed to satisfy even the most finicky eaters. For natural, no nasty, wholesome recipes, choose Burns Pet Nutrition. Available from veterinary clinics and all good pet shops across Ireland.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
We're back on the road this April with our live show, Cocaine Cowboys. If you want to hear the story of Ireland's love affair with Colombian powder and those who made millions in the gold rush, limited availability remains in Belfast at ulsterhall.co.uk. That's ulsterhall.co.uk.
They're trying to move money around to make it difficult for the investigators, but they can obviously figure out where the circular cash is going on, where I'm giving you 10 grand and you give 10 grand to someone else and they give to someone else and it comes back to me. You know, but it's rubbish. They can follow. Even if you break it up into small amounts and do it through your credit union account, if you can't explain where the cash came from, it came from the 10 grand that began with me and ended with me.
Yeah.
You know, no matter how many kind of buffers you put it through.
I'm Nicola Tallant and you're listening to Crime World, a podcast about criminals, drugs and the sins of the underworld in Ireland and across the globe.
The hard-pressed Irish taxpayer got a boost this week after the homes of three notorious gangland criminals were sold off at auction. The Criminal Assets Bureau raised a total of 1.2 million euros after putting the ill-gotten gains under the hammer at a special online fire sale. They included homes once owned by burglary gang boss Pale Miley Connors, Kinahan Cartel Chief Ross Browning and gangster David Waldron. Today, I'm talking with Eamon Dillon about how CAB are returning crime proceeds to the public purse. I'm Niall Donald and this is Crime World, a podcast from SundayWorld.com. So all of their plotting and criminality kind of came to a slightly unglamorous and unshowy end today for three individuals who've been, you know, in the Sunday World for many years as properties that were seized off them by the Criminal Assets Bureau went up for auction online. Not a kind of a ending with a whimper rather than a bang, I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose it was quiet. There wasn't the sound of the auctioneer's gavel or people yelling and screaming and all the rest of it. Yeah, but plot is certainly the operative word, all right.
Yeah, well, they may have been yelling and screaming at their computer screens at home, but there wasn't any live action of it anyway.
No. This is the way it's done now, I guess. So, yeah. I mean, I was just there watching. It lasted for an hour. So those five properties went up for sale. Three of them would have been Ross Browning's.
Yeah.
So one of those three was the kind of, I suppose, the main one in a sense that had a reserve price of 550,000. And it was a three-bed house that he lived in himself with his wife, as well as the cottage that his mother and her partner lived in, Chestnut Lodge. Now, we featured these plenty of times already. Yep. You know, they're nice looking, you know, very well done. It's on 3.2 acres. There's, pretty big sheds, a little equestrian center, the whole lot. Of course, he had the escape chute as well from the bedroom upstairs in the house down into the garage where a motorcycle was ready and waiting when the guards visited at some point in the past. So, I mean, that was the kind of the headline property, really, so to speak. Also for sale then was, I suppose, a more modest five-bedroom house in Belgar Heights in Tallaght that had once belonged to Pale Miley Connors, who was, of course, one of the kind of most notorious burglary gang leaders, I think, that, you know, we've managed to acquire in Ireland. His son, Fat Andy Connors, was, you know, a fairly famous gangland figure in his own right before he was shot dead, I think, was it 2016 back then?
Yeah.
around then anyway. So his house, you know, certainly looked more modest, but it had a reserve price of 240. And that was the one that had, I suppose, the most bidding. There were 79 separate bids made. There was, I think in the final minute, there were seven different people going at it, you know, going up €1,000 at a time.
Okay.
So I think it kind of says more about, you know, the desire for property in that neck of the woods, where houses similar to that were going well in excess of 400,000.
Yeah.
So the final price of 322,000, I think, is a pretty decent bargain. Now, they're probably going to have to spend a fair whack as well to bring it up. It was probably the worst property in terms of the condition it was in. It looks pretty nasty.
And can you see who's bidding? Like, do you have to do it by name, or do you have to log in? Or
no, you don't see. You have to log in, and you register as either, you know, someone who's going to bid or someone who's watching. So yeah. Even though I was registered as someone to watch, there was a big bid on this button on the screen, which I managed not to hit at any stage, especially on Ross Browning's. That hadn't gone for.
I wasn't going to sign that expense, Eamon, if it had come my way.
It would have been tricky, all right, to try and explain that one. We might have got a front page out of it, but, you know, with me going to prison for false accounting or something.
So did they start up, like, they say in the Pale Miley Connor's house, like, that went from what to what?
Well, I mean, all of them started off, like, the only one that kind of, that had an initial bid was the Connor's house.
Yeah.
You know, and that was for the reserve price of 240.
Yeah.
And the only other one then was plot number two, which was one of the little seaside plots in Rush County, Dublin, belonging to Browning. And that was second, and that was again for its reserve price of 45,000. And nobody else, there was no further bids on that.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of you can see how many people are watching. You can see what time a bid was made. How much it was for, and it happens live. So your screen updates as soon as somebody puts in a bid. I mean, if you've signed, used your email, you're also getting all this on email as well, so you can see what's happening.
Yeah.
So some people obviously were playing it pretty cool. I mean, certainly all the interest seemed to be in the Connor's house. You know? I mean, like, you know, after 20 minutes, it was the only one, you know, apart from the single bid on the plot in Rush, it was the only one that was getting any kind of traction in terms of the price was going up steadily all the time. You know, and there was nothing happening with the main property, with Browning's main property, and the second plot of land as well. And even Git Waldron's house in Killala Road, which is probably the house I would have thought was probably the easiest to sell.
Yeah.
You know, it's ready to move into, it's in a sought after part of town now by a lot of people. Like, you know, it's a Dublin's so expensive to get into, you know, buying in Cabra is a real option for a lot of people.
Or Fabra. As the Irish Times.
Oh, Fabra now, is it? Yeah. I didn't realise that.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, Cabra is, you know, it's been gentrified and the houses are going for huge values. I mean, an average 3-bedroom house in Cabra, I think, would be approaching 400,000 at this stage. Yeah. So what did his...
Well, it's funny because there must have been a lot of people, you know, compared to, say, Browning's main property, like, there was 28 people watching that. There was 58 watching the house in Cabra. So, right. I mean, there was a lot more interest, I think. Now, there was interest, but in terms of bidders, it took a long time. And there was one, I think there was one bid relatively early on. I think it was well after the first 30 minutes. And it was for the reserve price, which I think was 275,000. And then there was just two bidders and they went at it a little bit. One of them kind of went crazy and went up by $5,000 in a single bid. And it eventually went for 284. And it was just the two bidders going for it. Like, you know, so I mean, again, I think there was a similar end of Terrace House I was looking at there last year and it went for 344. So I guess it's a good bargain. I suppose the premium, you know, the margin you're paying for there is the fact that you're moving into, you know, Christopher Git Waldron's old home. So, you know, I have a feeling that a lot of these properties are actually bought by investors and they're going to be rented out.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people might be nervous for whatever reason.
Well, definitely, you know. I think with some of the Byrne organized crime houses that were seized, in particular Sean McGovern's house, I mean, that was stayed on the market for a long time. Crumlin, very like Cabra, that, you know, houses are selling, the values of them are really going up, but that didn't... took a long, long time to sell. There probably is a gangland discount, is there, in the sense that people would be wary of?
I suppose, yeah. It's what would you say? In a conscious to say, it's been priced in.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean, there is an element of, you know, you're going to get a bargain, but you're going to get it for a reason. And I think, you know, that's why it probably suits a builder stroke developer to buy these properties. Like, we know Liam Burns' house, number 2 Rally Square, went to a company that's a rental company.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about other properties recently that have gone for sale. Now, don't forget some of these places, like they weren't up for, they're not up, they haven't gone for sale yet, but you have the Gitt's brother, David Waldron's house. He's 3 houses now that have been totally, you know, deemed the proceeds of crime.
Yeah.
And one of those, the main mansion, I suppose, Darview Heights, that was sold in Wexford, that's apparently rented out. So there's people unconnected with crime living in that at the minute. So, I mean, they obviously have no problem. So, you know, I think to some extent that there won't be a big issue. I mean, even if I saw that last year, I was at the auction for Barry Fowler's house from the drug dealer from Tala, who was connected to the Kinnan cartel, and they had a house himself and his wife in Oilgate in County Wexford, and that went for a decent price of 266.
Yeah.
And you know, there wasn't too, I think there was only 2 bidders there. That was a live auction that was out in Clondalkin. I went to that, and there was people on the phone, and I think there was 1 bidder in the room, and that was it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it was more old fashioned. But I think a lot of people now, you just do it. I mean, you don't have to show your poker face. Like, you know, no. You can just do it online. It's probably easier in one sense.
I mean, it's interesting with the Waldrons there. You obviously had the piece on the weekend kind of going into the background of the criminality of, it was David Waldron in particular, but he was obviously, his brother Christopher was his closest associate, you could say. And you see over that, I suppose that covers, you know, a sort of roughly a 20-year period of his associations and his criminal activity, David Waldron's. You know, it actually makes, if you step back and look at it, it makes for quite grim reading, doesn't it? In terms of the number of people that he knew that ended up being killed, often by other people he may have known, and then, you know, they did make bursts of money, but it all amounts to nothing now, and it's sold off online to an anonymous bidder.
Yeah, it's an element of unpaid tax, is one way of looking at it. I mean, today's sales raised 1.2, just a little over 1.2 million for those 5 properties. So, I mean, that's a significant sum of money. Now, maybe if those houses in 2 years' time, if somebody bothers to check, you know, together might have made 2 million if they hadn't been, you know, belonging to somebody involved in gangland crime. But like, all 3 are pretty significant. I mean, you know, I mean, like, even, you know, you're talking about David Waldron, you know, what was it all for, kind of, you know, element. And you could say that now when you look at, you know, all the kind of the judgments, mortgage judgments against Andy Connors' wife.
Yeah.
You know, what did Bale Miley get out of it at the end? Died, you know, whatever age he was, 79, I think, you know, it was still, I think, had outstanding criminal charges. Like, you know.
I mean, what Bale Miley had a phenomenal amount of convictions, didn't he, over a huge amount of...
Like, yeah, I mean, he was notorious as a burglar in the 70s. Like,
yeah.
You know, and he's still picking up convictions in the 2000s.
Yeah.
You know, and his sons and grandkids, you know, some of them, you know, serious criminals, like, you know, involved in using tracker devices to hunt down business people who are trying to bring cash from their businesses in the UK, in Ireland, in Melbourne.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're not small time. Like, I mean, they were really prolific, a really dangerous gang. I mean, they probably... not single-handedly, but almost single-handedly kind of led to that whole era of the fear of rural crime, where people were, you know, were genuinely afraid of who was going to turn up outside their you know, their remote houses in rural Ireland, because these guys were so busy. Like, yeah. I mean, they were doing, like, I mean, like in terms of, I mean, we did a story recently, again, it's another property that's going to be up for sale relatively soon as well, Thomas Wall and his wife Tina, and he was part of the Bullet Connors gang, and again linked to Pale Miley's gang, and like his you know, the belief evidence in that was given, this is a story that we ran last January, the belief evidence in that just reads like a list of all these burglaries in Donegal and Mayo, and some of them would have been really affected people at the time, would have made a lot of headlines in the local papers and even the national papers. And they weren't, you know, these were the suspects. They were never caught for it.
No.
And like, and these are, you know, they're based in Kildare, they're based in Dublin, and yet they're carrying out raids in Mayo and Donegal, like in remote areas. Like,
yeah,
you know,
I mean, so they professionalized a kind of a style of crime, I suppose, didn't it? Those burglary gangs where they were in and out really quickly.
Yeah,
up and down the motorways.
And there was different names for them, like the M50 gang, the Subaru gang, because at one stage, you know, 20 years ago, they were stealing the Subaru Impreza and chipping them or whatever, and they were basically, they could outrun any Garda car for the simple reason that they were so reckless and crazy. And I think, like, again, do you know, like, I mean, this gang were responsible probably for hurrying up and getting an aerial unit and having a guard helicopter. And also some of them as well were involved. There was so much crime that, you know, again, it also influenced the whole idea around changing, you know, the bail laws, which, of course, we saw about the recently passed away Tony Filoni as well. Like, you know, but I suppose it was about these kind of really recidivist criminals who just are prolific and just keep at it and can't stop or won't stop.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, they're in and out of prison and they don't care about their own personal safety, you know.
No, but they weren't, of course, they'd be caught for a bit and they wouldn't get huge sentences and be in and out. And of course, they were in and out of the houses just as quickly, weren't they? It was, you know, a lot of these burglaries are done in a matter of minutes, wasn't it?
It is, yeah, they were. And because, I suppose, of the sheer volume,
yeah,
that this is where we come back then to the property that Cab are seizing,
yeah,
that it wasn't small time.
Yeah.
You know, they're breaking in, saying, oh, they're breaking into a filling station and they're stealing cigarettes.
Yeah.
But they're doing that five times in a single night and they're maybe doing it four nights a week.
Yeah.
You know, it's adding up to several thousands.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, you know, they're probably making 20, 30, 40 grand even on a good night.
Yeah.
So, you know, multiply that, it's all of a sudden you're getting close to $500,000 a month.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, it wouldn't be necessarily one individual or five or six. So, you know, it's a collective of, you know, 20 or 30 people.
Yeah.
But the guys at the top, like Pale Miley and Fat Andy, were the guys who are really raking it in.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I suppose even with the Waldron brothers, like, you know, I mean, you know, they took over, a lucrative patch and they were selling, you know, they were moving on a lot of drugs and, you know, had so much money, had to put it somewhere. And I mean, and like the eye-watering expense that went into likes of Darview Heights, you know, it's going to hurt them, like, you know, to know that they don't have access to these properties anymore.
And I think it does act as a serious deterrent for criminals. Like, if you look at the Waldrons, like, although they were very, very significant players in Dublin and probably elsewhere as well, but like the amount of money that he could amass without being an international wholesaler, like, it is quite stunning. Like, it's a huge amount of money we're moving around, and a lot of people getting sucked into that movement of cash.
Yeah. I mean, you see that in a lot of those cab cases where, you know, they're trying to move money around to make it difficult for the investigators, but it seems to be, they can obviously figure out where the circular, you know, cash is going on, where I'm giving you 10 grand and you give 10 grand to someone else and they give to someone else and it comes back to me. You know, it's rubbish. Like, yeah, you know, they can follow, even if you break it up into small amounts and do it through your credit union account, if you can't explain where the cash came from, it came from the 10 grand that began with me and ended with me.
Yeah.
You know, no matter how many kind of buffers you put it through.
That was also the undoing of Ross Browning in this case as well, wasn't it, really? The movement of cash between, you know, family members and their extended network.
Yeah, I mean, like, it very much seems to be in his job to be the cartel's man in Ireland. I mean, that phrase has been used so many times now, but it was said in court, you know, he was the number one, the Kinahan cartel's number one man in Ireland. And it was a billion euro drug enterprise that's what it was all about.
Yeah.
So obviously his share, I'm sure some of it was salted away quite carefully, because we know, as well as drug smuggling, the Kinahans are experts in laundering as well. We know they have massive international connections, and to be honest, like, you know, the 550,000 that the state gets back, you know, from the sale of these properties today is probably, you know, the tip of a very large iceberg. But I mean, his attempt to kind of, you know, with his kind of fitness guru business and his gym, you know, giving gifts to his relatives, you know, and to their partners and all the rest. I mean, running a business without a bank account, you know, using, you know, somebody else's credit card to pay for flights of, you know, people directly linked to the Kinahans, you know, coming from the States or whatever. All of that stuff, like, just added up, you know, it was all just unexplained wealth. And that's the kind of, I suppose, the beauty of the Proceeds of Crime Act is that it's about unexplained wealth. It can't be unexplained. You have to explain it.
Yeah,
and the onus is on you, the gangster, to say, well, I want to play in cards. Who with? Where did he get his money? You know, it doesn't go for, you know, just one round of hiding the money. Like, in one sense, it used to. I mean, again, like with Filoni, when it came up, like, looking back at the stuff this week after he passed away, like, his initial, you know, he had a lot of unexplained wealth, but his initial kind of, it was revenue going after him, and it kind of actually preceded, you know, what the Criminal Assets Bureau could do. And then they took it over, and it just showed you how effective they were. There was so much, you know, the legislation just made it so much more efficient and so much easier.
Yeah.
Like that. And it just completely switched the onus of proof onto the person, the gangster with the cash that everyone knew was an out and out gangster.
Yeah. I mean, it's the CAB are now running a few of these auctions. This is obviously probably not run by CAB, but they have also auctioned off, they're auctioning off these big, beautiful properties, but they've also been auctioning off everything from Moncler jackets and
all your designer watches. Yeah, there was a well-timed one there just before Christmas with lots of luxury goods, including I think it was a gold bars and various bits and bobs like that, you know, which you know, did a lot. But I mean, I think that the CAB are, I think they understand very much like part of their remit is to make a really obvious public point, and that there's no point in selling this stuff off to a dealer, or, to a wholesaler to move them on for you, and then they want to do a big show.
Yeah.
You know, here's a bunch of gangsters' watches. You know, give us what you want for them.
Yeah.
But there is also a legal obligation that they have to get the open market price. They can't do a quiet deal. They can't say, for instance, hand a gold bar to a charity,
okay,
or they can't hand over a property to a charity, you know, to somebody or to the local authority saying that there's a housing crisis in this area, we're going to give this property to you. They're not actually allowed to do that. They do actually have to put it on the market. And I suppose an auction is a real obvious way. It's an open market.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's progressive myself. I think it shows the work they do. I think it also is a deterrent, or it is a, you know, it's all very well buying your Moncler jacket, but if you know that someday that it's going to be in the papers that it was taken off you and auctioned off for, you know, 400 or 500 quid or whatever, like it is the right way for the police forces to go. And I do think CAB have been kind of at the forefront of you know, even the simple fact of putting the cases ahead of them appearing on social media. You know, it is a kind of a bit of a change for some of the Gardaí, isn't it?
I know. I think. I mean, I suppose like the rest of Irish society, even the guards, some of them are becoming progressive.
Yeah, yeah.
And I suppose the thing about the Criminal Access Bureau is not all guards. I mean, there are people from other departments, and there is also their legal officers as well. You know, and some of them, I'm sure, are quite ambitious and might have, you know, an eye on the Attorney General's job or something like that in years to come, or other, you know, state jobs. But I mean, like they know what they're doing. Like, I mean, and they have the legislation to back it up. They're looking to change that now to make it even easier. I mean, there was the time where you had to hold on to assets for 7 years before they could, you know, finally, you know, dispose of them.
Yeah.
Which is kind of wrong at a time when there's a housing crisis and if you're sitting on a load of property. So what they're doing now sometimes is they're getting permission to sell it, and then the actual assets, the money that comes from those sales, that's what's held on to now for 7 years, rather than the car or the house. They're able to move things on. So, you know, if you win your case, you don't necessarily get your house back, but you get the money plus the interest that you would have got if you'd owned at the time. So you're not being deprived of your wealth if it turns out that you were wrong all along. But it's unlikely, because, I mean, once it gets to that point, you've already gone through so many stages. You've gone through the in-camera section two part of it, where, you know, the judge has more or less made a decision that, yeah, it looks like it's pretty much the process seeds of crime. And then even before then, you know, we start to hear stuff then in court when it's at, you know, various applications are made in section 2, section 4 and other sections as well. Sometimes they can skip, you know, they don't necessarily go through it step by step.
Yeah.
It just depends what way the case is going.
Well, I'll have to log on to the next one, and maybe if there's...
It was very exciting for the first 30 minutes. No, it wasn't.
Well, I'll check it out myself next time. Thanks very much, Eamon.
Always a pleasure, Niall.
You've been listening to Crime World, a podcast from SundayWorld.com. Produced by Ian Mullaney and edited by me, Nicola Tallant. Research assistant is Claude Amini. If you like this show and love true crime, leave us a review. Or why not download the free SundayWorld.com app for lots more stories from Ireland and across the globe.
Would you like to be able to start conversations like a pro? Take the Sunday World, your daily dose of what's going on. Do not consume the Sunday World if you're involved in a drug cartel, you're a politician with something to hide, or you've appeared on a reality TV show and care about others' opinions. Consume the Sunday World responsibly. Always read the stories, gossip, and commentary.